Welcome into College Golf Talk. Berko is not here. This is Brentley. I'm not running solo, though. This week, it's Players Week. Berko's doing the A-10 basketball. He's doing like 6 games in 4 days or something like that. I kind of lost track. But I got a great guest, someone who covers a college game, probably more than me at this point, Cameron Jordan from Golf Week. Cameron, is that an accurate assessment? I think you might spend more time covering college golf than I do.
I don't know if it's an accurate assessment. I mean, trying to keep up with you is how I look at it too. You're one of one when it comes to college golf coverage, and I've been doing it for more than a decade now. So I don't know if I do more than you, but I definitely think that you and I are probably one and two up there.
Yeah. I put us there, Berko, Ben Adelberg, Ryan Frazier in a different capacity. There's a lot of college golf sickos that like to get their beaks wet this time of year. I have one gripe with Berko. Did a conference basketball tournament pool, and you know, being Mr. College Basketball, I asked him for some advice, and he said that if there's one team that's going to win their conference tournament, it's the Liberty Flames. Well, as we speak, there's about 5 minutes left in the quarterfinals of the CUSA tournament. Liberty is losing to Missouri State by 6 points. So hopefully by the time we finish this recording, I can log back on ESPN and see that the fortunes have changed. If not, Berko's going to get an earful tomorrow. But alas, that's enough for college basketball minute. Let's quickly dive into the scores. But we'll spend some time on the first men's event that we got, the Haight Invitational. You were there just 2 days, is that right? Sunday or maybe just Monday?
Just there Monday for the final round. And it was came down to the end in both the individual and the team competition. It was a pretty wild tournament.
Yeah, I was looking. There was a 10 made on a hole. Let's break down the finish here, because there was triple bogeys on the individual side on the last hole. The team competition was up for grabs between Charlotte and Auburn and Texas Tech. Can you break down for us just kind of what we need to know on the team side, and then we'll switch into the individual?
Yeah, I think on the team side, the first thing is that Charlotte, was ranked 21st in the country when the week started, Charlotte was leading the tournament for a majority of the back nine. And then unfortunately, like you said, Justin Matthews was tied for the lead, ends up making a 10 on the 17th hole. He hit 3 shots out of bounds on that hole, has water on one side of the fairway, and ended up hitting 3 balls out of bounds. And that sent Charlotte from first in a really good chance to win all the way down to third. Obviously pretty unfortunate that happened for them. And then you look at Auburn. Auburn had a 1-shot lead over Texas Tech, and the wind was kind of playing back into the players on the final closing par five. Texas Tech was in the house and just kind of sitting up on the hill and watching, and 2 Auburn players in a row missed within probably about 4 foot putts for birdie that kind of would have put the tournament away. But Jackson Koivun, world number one, I mean, he's as good as advertised. I think everybody would agree with that. He hit his tee shot in the left rough, hits a 2nd shot to the front of the green, had about a probably 50-yard pitch shot and put it to 3 feet and knocked in the putt, and won for the 3rd time in 4 events and helped Auburn win the team title to beat Texas Tech by 2 shots. So it was came down to the wire. I feel really bad for Charlotte. Obviously, it's having a really good season. It's not a bad tournament, but it would have been really impressive to see them win, especially with this field, considering Auburn and Virginia were both in it, among some other teams too.
Yeah, it's certainly heartbreaking for Charlotte. And I texted Ryan Cabbage, their head coach, which many people might not know, he is an Auburn guy. Like, he went to Auburn, he coached at Auburn for a little bit. He is Auburn through and through. So kind of apropos that it ended up being the Tigers that won this. But yeah, he said Justin's going to be fine. Look, this kid's been their best player all year, and that's not going to change. They're going to throw him right back into the fire. He'll be better from this. So I'm not worried about Charlotte. They're one of the better mid-majors. And then Jackson Koivun, you mentioned 50-yard pitch shot at 3 feet. That's one of the things that I think separates Jackson from some of the other studs that we've seen come through college golf the last 5 or 6 years, and that his wedge game is elite. It's the PGA Tour ready, which that's a lot of times the area that guys need to work on, along with their short game and scrambling. Now, bunker play, short game, still a long way to go. He's doing some work with Josh Gregory now, the renowned short game coach. But putting and wedging are the 2 things that I think Jackson Koivun does the best. And those are often the two areas that we see guys struggle with, even when they get out on the PGA Tour. I mean, how often are some of these top 10 pros in the world struggling with their putters?
You know, I was standing next to Chris Richards, who does stuff with the PGA Tour and PGA Tour University. And we were standing there as he was lining up the pitch shot. And I kind of looked at him and I said, what do you think? He gets this within 10 feet, 90 out of 100 times if he sits there and hits this shot. And of course, he puts it even closer than that. We both kind of looked at each other and just laughed because, like you said, how good he is with his wedges. And then on the putting greens, he's the best putter in college golf. I think that's a pretty fair assessment to say. There may be some other players who are fairly close to him, but he's so dominant because when he has a wedge in his hands, he can put it on the green anywhere close. He can read every type of grass good. I mean, as we've seen this spring, he's won in Hawaii, he's won twice in Florida, finished third out in Las Vegas. I mean, he can play in all types of grasses, all types of weather, all types of conditions. He's been successful, and it's just, he's got such a tour-ready game, like you said, with the short game, that I think when he eventually gets out there, he's going to have success right away.
Yeah, Buddy Alexander, their volunteer assistant, legendary coach for the Florida Gators, said top two putter or best putter since Brian Gay. And Brian Gay is obviously one of the best to ever do it on the greens. Just looking further down the team leaderboard, Texas Tech second, LSU tied Charlotte for third. They got off to a hot start, 14 under in the first round, cooled off just a bit, actually almost doubled their loss total from the season. North Carolina fifth, Virginia, the top-ranked team in the country, they're sixth. It's going to be interesting. Have the rankings already come out? Yeah, the rankings have already come out. Auburn has jumped Virginia, now the number one team in the country. Further down the leaderboard, I got to shout out Liberty. Clearly, it's not just basketball that they're struggling in right now, 15th out of 16 teams. And then the host, Ospreys, North Florida, ending that. So Jackson Koivin, that is now 8 individual wins, I believe, for him.
Correct. Yeah. Eight collegiate wins.
Which continues, adds to his school record. He's really good. I'm going to try to get, hopefully, putting the finishing touches on getting up to Auburn next week to do something with him. So, but he's going to be a star when he gets onto the PGA Tour this summer, as we all expect him to announce at some point. It's not official, but I think we could probably start right then and pen right now. Well, let's switch gears. Let's go from the East Coast to the West Coast in a first-year event, the Desimone at Lake Merced, which is a great golf course. We played it, right? Didn't we play it together?
No, I did not play Lake Merced last summer. I left the U.S. Amateur early that week, and okay. I didn't get to play.
We played so much golf together this past year that I forget which rounds are which. But anyways, great. I mean, great course. The redesign that they did, spectacular. And they're going to host International Crown on the LPGA side, obviously hosting this event to honor the great Steve Desimone, the longtime Cal coach. But Arizona State wins by 29 shots over TCU. Texas tied for third with Cal and SMU. Danny Bennett getting on a plane, like a few other guys from tour events, getting on a plane and finishing seventh to lead the team. But T38, Luke Potter, T38, Tommy Morrison. Cameron, I think we've talked about this before, whether it be in our Haskins watch list committee meetings or just elsewhere. Texas is probably the best team on paper. But there's some, it's concerning seeing some of these results out of them.
It's been really strange. It seems like they're being able to get one or two players to play really well, but they haven't all gotten, I mean, you look at what many would consider the big three in Christian Moss, Daniel Bennett, and Tommy Morrison. I don't think if we were to go back and look at every single tournament, I don't think all three of them have played up to the standard they're capable of together yet. And for Texas to have a chance to win a national championship, they need all three of them to do that. Add in Luke Potter this week. I mean, like you said, Luke and Tommy finishing T38. It's not bad, but they could be better. Like you said, Daniel Bennett 7th, Christian Moss 12th. Especially when you consider Daniel Bennett, like you said, flying cross country, playing the Arnold Palmer Invitational, making the cut. He probably was, I would assume that Lake Merced was playing a little bit easier than Bayhill was. So he probably enjoyed not having to stress a little bit as much. But yeah, I think Texas is fine. I'm not too worried about it. But it is kind of odd that all three of their big three haven't quite just perform to the level they're able to at the same time in the same tournament yet.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, you know, Texas doesn't get out west too often. They played Pasatiempo a couple of times, but they're the host of the national championship, which is also played in the state of California. Just a real quick Daniel Bennett nugget from Scott McConnell, their SID, who does really great work and helps us out a ton, especially those 2 weeks at La Costa. But I said early afternoon, completes his fourth round at the Arnold Palmer. 7:33 p.m. flight, Eastern time, out of Orlando. Arrives in San Francisco at 10:52. That's pretty good time. And then 8:45 a.m. Pacific time, tees off in the first round and played 36 holes that day. So hats off to Danny Bennett, the Iron Man. As you know, he's been through a lot of adversity. This is nothing to him. So that was the Desimone. One more tournament that we'll kind of dive in, and then I'll just throw out a few results. But I think we got to talk about Bandon Dunes. We spent a lot of time there last summer. We played the course that they played, which I believe they were on Pac Dunes all three rounds. And yes. Oregon State, 17-shot win over rival Oregon. And the freshman, the U.S. junior runner-up, win on men. Right, might be men win. Yeah, anyways. Pacific Dunes record, 61, 10 under, first round. Amazing. That was just a few shots lower than what we shot that day. But this is kind of one of those things. I've been saying it, like Oregon State, John Rehorn's done a pretty good job. But it's just a matter of, I think they needed that blue chip recruit and they got it here. And this just shows. I mean, he didn't play much in the fall, if not at all. Played some of the Asian stuff, the SEA Games too. But now getting into a rhythm in college golf, they could be a pretty sneaky team. I think they're now rankings wise, doing a quick search. They've had to climb quite a bit in the rankings. They're up to 62. That would be inside the bubble for an at large. This could be a fairly dangerous team, depending on what regional they get sent to. Thoughts on the Bandon Dunes Championship though?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're 8 under through 10 at that course, I would assume the wind was maybe not blowing 30, but the wind is always going to be blowing out there. It's pretty incredible when you consider just what he did and what he accomplished. 8 under through 10, when you look at his scorecard, he birdied their three par fives on the backside at Pacific Dunes. He only birdied two of the three coming in and wasn't able to tally anymore, but it's just what an incredible performance by him. Like you said, Oregon State places three in the top four, and it's a big enough win. Like you said, it gets them jump. It's going to help them to make sure that they're fully above the 500 rule. Let's see what they do to build off of this, because this is one of those performances that going to a place like that and having such a dominant win, it can really kind of propel you onto some other things. And like you said, they could be a team that, if they get one of these at-large bids, could be pretty dangerous come NCAAs, come regionals.
Well, speaking of 500 rule, we're going to play a little bit of a game later with the 500 rule. Although, for those teams that are on the bubble or perhaps below 500, it's probably doesn't feel too much like a game right now. But for us, we'll try to make it fun and informative for our listeners. But we'll spin through some of the other men's results real quickly. The R.E. Lampkin Invitational, San Diego, 2-shot win over Long Beach State. BYU, third place, but Kihei Akina, 14 under, wins the individual title by a shot over Alejandro De Castro from Long Beach. Kihei played in the Puerto Rico Open, had a pretty good finish, made the cut, almost finished top 10, and then gets on a plane and wins a college event. So I'm willing to put that above Daniel Bennett in that accomplishment. But hats off to Kihei, who I think both of us had tabbed as probably the best freshman in the class coming in this year. The Johnny O, Sea Island. I think this was at, this says Sea Island Resort. I don't know if it was at Seaside. Oh, it was at the Plantation course. So lots of birdies. So it's no surprise that 42 under wins it. Both Georgia Southern and Florida Gulf Coast share the title. Both teams, I think, are in line for at-large berths, two of the better mid-majors in the country. Looking further down, though, Notre Dame, 23rd. National ranking coming into this event. Kind of a disappointing finish, so we'll see how much they slip there. Louisiana Classics. This one is played at Oakbourne Country Club in Lafayette. Malin Potgieter with the individual win for host Louisiana. Wins by 3, no relation to Aldrich. And then Texas A&M wins the team title over Little Rock, another great mid-major, by 7 shots. Men's events, Cleveland Golf, Palmetto Intercollegiate, one of the great golf courses in the country, in my opinion. Palmetto Golf Club, always good to get out there, Masters Week, hit the ball around a little bit, loosen up the fingers to write some stories those 2 weeks. But Campbell wins by 2 over UAB. And individually, it is Ashton Harper from Virginia Tech who beats Benjamin Killingstad, one of the better names in golf, of Campbell by a shot. And so that's the men's results. Anything stand out there to you, or should we move on to the women?
One quick note, too. You mentioned that we'd take Kihei over Danny Bennett. Puerto Rico is just a little bit further than Orlando, obviously going to San Diego, to San Francisco, Northern California, Southern California. But yeah, that's a really impressive win.
I'd connect, probably.
I think he only had 2 hours of sleep, from what I understand, and then goes and plays 36 holes on Monday, Tuesday 18 to get his first collegiate win. I mean, you can't really say much more about how impressive that was.
What's the most you've ever connected on a single trip?
You know, I think I've actually been fairly lucky. The most I've ever had to connect is just one stop. And I've never had to do a double connection. I'm actually going to Europe later this summer, and that's a single connection too. So I've gotten pretty lucky with much. It'll happen eventually where I'll have to double connect, but hasn't yet.
Going to Europe, you going for work, pleasure?
Going for pleasure. Have some family that lives in Germany on the wife's side, and it's going to be my first time across the pond. So looking forward to it.
Oh, nice. Never been to Germany. It's always been on the bucket list. She'll have to copy down the itinerary after you come back and share it with everyone on the pod. But the most I've ever done, I think is twice. I don't like to connect. I like the directs. I'll drive if it's up to, and Burko has the rule, if it's over 6 hours, he doesn't drive. But yeah, I think the most I've ever connected was going to, it might have been Bandon, actually, for the USAM in 2020. I think I flew to Atlanta. Actually, this might have been, yeah, this was a double connection. Orlando to Atlanta, Atlanta to Seattle, Seattle to Eugene. So that was long, and that was during COVID too. So I was wearing the N95 mask, and I felt like my nose was going to break off after I took the mask off at the end of that travel day. It was too much.
That
too
is
much.
A long
Anyways,
time.
Anyways, we're getting off the rails just a little bit, but I think our listeners like when we kind of peel back the curtain and talk about random stuff in our lives. Anyways, women's golf, the Game Above Invitational, a new event USC hosts at Rolling Hills where they practice, and they win, as they should. They beat Texas A&M, two of the best teams in the country. Oregon was also in there as well, but USC wins by 12, and they beat Oregon by, if I can do my math correctly, 33 shots. SMU is tied for fourth with Eastern Michigan with the large bankroll, and also Arizona, UCLA seventh. Good event. Individually, Kylie Chong wins. It continues to kind of solidify herself as, you know, not just a 4 or 5 player, but someone who is ready to take the reins next year when Kathy Park turns pro. And then Bailey Shoemaker, you know, coming off the arm issue, didn't play at all in the fall, but finished as runner up. That's her best finish, I think, anywhere since, I want to say, the Augusta National Women's Amateur 2 years ago.
I think you're correct. Yeah, I think you're correct on that.
Thoughts on this event while I look up Bailey's results?
Yeah, I think that USC and Texas A&M, and including Oregon in this too, obviously they're ranked second, fourth, and third respectively going in. When you have three of the top four teams in the country, it's going to turn out to be a pretty good field. I was texting Oregon coach Derek Radley and found out that Kiara Romero, if you go look at her scores, she didn't play the first round. I guess she woke up with the flu and was extremely under the weather and only played the second and third round, and still ended up shooting 2 under, obviously.
Didn't even realize that.
Yeah, doesn't. So a first round score doesn't count, and that kind of put the ducks behind them. But she came back out in the afternoon, shot even par, and then in the final round, I was able to shoot two under, and Derek was really proud of her for gutting it out and said how much she wanted to fight for her teammates. And obviously you hate to see someone dealing with sickness. I guess there was a few teams and a few players that were a little bit under the weather. I know there's been stuff going around pretty much all winter and into this spring now, but like you said, really impressive from Bailey to come back from her injury. Kylie Chong's looking like one of the best players in the country this year, and she just continues to put up results that show off. This UFC team is deep. This Texas A&M team is deep. There's a bunch of depth on the women's side. I know Stanford is separated somewhat, but once you get to match play, doesn't matter, as we've seen this year. Really impressive win by USC.
It's the second win of her college career, second win of the season, but first solo win. She shared the Golf Week Red Sky Classic with her teammate, Jasmine Koo. Bailey Shoemaker, I was close. She was also runner-up at regionals in East Lansing just a few weeks after that Augusta National Women's Amateur runner-up in 2024. You know who's not going to like that Kiara Romero WD or, you know, in the first round? Do you know?
Who's that?
The professor. She's dropped from fourth to sixth in the rankings, loses a few Brody bucks, going to need to replenish the bank account as we finish out this spring. So it's tough. I mean, you know, you want them to play for the team, but I think individually, and although I think it's a round by round thing, but you know, still, it obviously didn't help her. She dropped two spots. But anyways, enough about rankings talk. Otherwise, you know, certain group of people might be upset, even though they are upset at me all the time. Anyways, to Julie Inkster, Stanford typically plays in this event, but they're not in it. San Jose State took advantage. When I talked to Dana Dorman, their head coach, last week or 2 weeks ago after they beat Stanford in that head-to-head, they were way below 500. And she did the math. She said, we have to win each of our next two events going into the Mountain West Conference Championship, which they're probably going to win. They're the favorites. But anyways, she's like, you have to win both events just to get above 500. So far, so good. Halfway there, they win by one shot over Cal Santa Clara, who almost won the West Coast Conference Championship in basketball last night, but lost to the Zags. But they are third. And the Gators Invitational, this last women's event that we'll kind of go over before we do our little 500 rule game. But Florida, as they should, defend home turf, 18-shot win over Virginia. North Carolina coming off a great performance at the Chevron, I believe it was, or whatever event was in Texas. Yeah. Was that the Chevron? Something. Yeah. Anyways, coming off a big win, they finished third. And then Miami fourth, Clemson fifth to round out the top five. And individually, Paula Francisco, five-shot win. Good to see her getting in the winner's circle. Super consistent. Last year, this year, kind of the leader of this team when she's getting on the correct shuttle. Let's go into the rankings real quick. I'm going to throw out some 500 rule. Or 500 teams or teams that are at or below 500. And your job is to say over or under in terms of how they're going to finish. All right.
And in terms of how they're going to finish, not how they are right now.
Correct. Well, I mean, that'd be pretty easy if I told you they were over and under. You just repeated it. That would be very simple. but anyways, our first team, which... kind of in familiar territory, but UCLA, 31st in the country, but they are 46-59-4. They have a couple of events left, including the Big Ten Championship, which has a bazillion teams in it. Are they over or are they under?
Oh, I mean, when you look at their schedule, they have the good win, which I believe doesn't that have like 30-something teams that play in it?
Well, this is women's.
Oh, this is women's.
Oh, no, sorry. Oh. This is men's. This is men's. Okay. I'm on the men's side. You are three steps ahead of me. But it doesn't change. 31st, 46, 59, and 4. UCLA men over or under with the Goodwin and the bazillion teams left. In the Thunderbird.
It's three pretty tough tournaments. I mean, I'm going to go over. I think the Goodwin, I mean, all you need is a top 10 finish, if not a little bit better at the Goodwin. Yeah. And then And then you're going to be right around 500. And then all you got to do is be, again, a 500 team. And I think UCLA is probably one of the better teams in the Big Ten. I would expect them to have a winning record coming out of that. I think that, yeah, 13 below right now, but with three tournaments to go, I mean, you just got to make up four or five spots every tournament. I think they're going to be finish over 500.
I still go back to, gosh, this must have been 2019 when SMU played the Goodwin. And they had the old WD/DQ combo, took losses to every team in the field, and were like a 10th seed in regionals. And they ended up making match play that year at the Blessings as the last team in, beat Clemson in a playoff to get the 8th seed. But it kind of shows you it's kind of dangerous playing a field that big, because you take a lot of losses. But hopefully in UCLA's case, they get a lot of wins. This one might be a little bit easier. Chris Hack. His last few events as a Georgia golf coach, they're 34th in the country right now, but they are 44 and 46. This might be an easy one, but with three events left on the schedule, actually four events left on the schedule, although I think this Southern Intercollegiate is a small field and a one-day event, but with four events left on the schedule, are they over or are they going to be under?
I got to go over. You got to think that those kids on that team are going to be pretty fired up and want to send Hacker out, get him to NCAA regionals and have a chance to make nationals. I mean, that's what you'd like to think in a perfect world, right? We're sitting here doing that, but I'm going to go over. I just think that, again, it's his last ride. I don't think he's going to necessarily, I think he's going to try to do whatever he can to fire his team up to play. And like you said, they've got a couple of events that should be able to capitalize, and they're not far beneath the numbers. So I'm going to go over.
The 39th ranked team in the country, UW Washington, they are 47, 56, and 1. So 9 wins under 500. And they have the good one. They are playing the mammoth event at Stanford Golf Course. They have the Western Intercollegiate on Golf Channel at Pasatiempo. And they have the Big Ten Championships at Pumpkin Ridge. Are they going to be over? Or will they be under?
And man, they finished.
You've gone over. Over for both Georgia and UCLA. Are we going to go in under?
Washington finished dead last at the Desimone, and they went that one tournament right there is 14 losses and takes them under. You know what? I can't go three in a row over. I'm going to go under because I think that looking at their schedule, they haven't played their best golf this spring. And yeah, you can always turn that around, but don't come after me, Washington fans, but I've got to go under. I think they're going to be under 500 on this one.
Yeah. Well, I looking at the analytics of this podcast, I don't think we have any Washington fans that listen. I'm just kidding. They don't do any analytics by that. That would be cool if they did, because we know which teams to talk about more. We'll do one more on the men's side. We'll kind of cap this at the top 60 or so. But number 56, SMU, they are 37, 55, and 2. And they're coming off a third-place finish at the Desimone. They were just 21st out of 24th at the Prestige, which I think was legit. I don't think they had any. The final round was canceled, so that was obviously tough. They couldn't make up ground. But, yeah, they had their William Side, Zach Kingsland. They're horses at the top, but I think I might know the answer to this one too. But at 18 wins under 500 right now, are they going to be over or are they going to be under?
That's a lot of
risk. They're also playing the good one too. I feel like everyone's playing the good one.
Yeah, half the country, but they
need to rename that event to the Get You Some Wins Invitational or something. Have Larry the Cable Guy MC or something. They're under, right? They got to be under.
Yeah, you got to think under. I mean, if they can throw together a couple more tournaments like they have, like you said, the third place finish this last week at the Desimone, but 21st of 24 at the Prestige, 10 of 13, 10 of 12. So not trending necessarily great over the last few tournaments. Now, maybe something happened and once the calendar flipped to March, turned around, but yeah, you got to go under on this one.
Now on the women's side, this team is not under 500 right now, but they're close. Number 22, South Carolina, 49-48 in a tie. And they just won something called the shootout at Wachusett, which doesn't seem like it should come with any wind. But they were just last at the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate. They were 11th at Moon Golf. Talk about trending. This team is not trending. But with the SEC Championship plus one more, the Old Barnwell Derby match play, which I don't think counts as head-to-head. It might if they play straight-up match play. But anyways, with that and just the SECs, do you think they can stay above 500 or will they be under? I'm kind of liking this. This is like a game show.
This is a tough one.
Or under.
I'd like to think that Kaylin Anderson is going to have her team ready to go, and I'm sure that she will. They really need Ella Golitzky to play well, and obviously it takes a team. We know that's college golf, but they really need Ella Golitzky to play well. But, you know, I just think the SEC, obviously we know how deep the SEC is on the women's side. And with only looking at the schedule, unless we're missing something, like you said, with only the match play coming up at Old Barnwell and SECs, I'm going to go under. I know they're one above right now, but like you said, have not been trending well. Stuff can turn around really easily, but I'm going to go with the under.
In full transparency, we're looking at the schedule that is on the scoreboard site, which may or may not be 100% accurate. Of course, if you listen to this podcast, you know that nothing is a guarantee on scoreboard in terms of accuracy. But anyways, they're really going to hate me even more after this, but they just need to get, they need to start for, all right, my one tangent, my one gripe for this episode.
Let's hear it.
You go and click on an individual, Farrah O'Keefe, for example. You click on her. It still says she's a freshman. She's a junior. I think I may have said this on the last pod too, so apologies, but it just really sticks with me that the quality control, you can't have an intern or someone go in and spend 2 days and just double check rosters, at least for your top 100 players. It just baffling schedules, the style of tournaments and dates and all sorts of things. And the worst part, which makes our job a little bit harder, especially on this podcast, is have you noticed when you go to like the results page and you go to try to sort by like division one, whatever, and you go down and it says see more. Oh wait, I think they finished. I think they fixed it. It used to say see more, and when you clicked it, it didn't work. So looks like they fixed that part. So kudos. That's a positive. See, that's a positive. Okay. Anyways, I agree with you. I think South Carolina is on a little bit of a bubble concern right now, but if Ella Golitzky can play like she did for the first two rounds of Darius Rucker instead of the last round, they'll have a chance. Just scrolling down the ranking now, Arizona State 51-48. We won't go over them. I think they'll be fine once they get Patience Rhodes back in the fold. I'm not seeing a ton of teams that are under. These coaches they've complained about the 500 rule coming to women's golf, but they have adjusted very, very quickly. I am not seeing a team in the top. San Jose State, we talked about them earlier. They are now 18 wins under, 47-65. Although I don't think that's counting. Oh, it is counting the Julie Inkster. All right, let's do them. San Jose State, under or over?
You know what? I'm going to take the team that's playing really well, really, really well right now. Obviously, I think the Mountain West. I think the Mountain West Championship is when they're going to have to accomplish that. They have two tournaments before that. Chevron Silverado coming up first. But I'd look for them to have a strong finish there in Napa and then go into the Mountain West at Mission Hills and Rancho Mirage. Like you said, favorite to win that, probably going to win it to get the automatic bid anyway. But I think that they're going to be over 500 even if they didn't. So I'm going over on that one.
Well, I spoke too soon, Cameron, because starting with Cal at number 50, we are rattling off a ton of teams that are below 500. So we're going to switch up the game to close here, and then we're going to get to an interview, which I forgot to tease at the beginning, which Berko would is going to get mad at me for, because he never forgets to tease the big interview coming at the end of the pod, which is with Farrah O'Keefe from Texas, sat down with her last week at the Darius Rucker after her first round. So that will come after this, but we're going to change the game up to close here. I'm going to rattle off these teams from 50 to 60 who are all below 500. I'll tell you how many wins below they are too, but your job is to give me one over and one under without putting a ton of thought into it, just your gut.
Okay.
So we've got Cal, they're one win below 500. We have Michigan at 52 in the country. They are 8 below 500. Illinois, 53rd. Two of the better teams at the Big Ten on hardwood, not in golf, 41 and 54, 13 below for Illinois. Alabama, 55, 34, and 54. They're 20 below. They are in some serious trouble. And then UNC Wilmington, 50 and 52. And UNLV, 44 and 63. But I also have to shout out High Point, getting it done in men's basketball. Also 61st in women's golf. But out of those teams that I just named, High Point not being one of them, they're 75 and 8. They're having a great year. But out of those teams, who is your most likely to be over and who's your most likely to be under?
All right, we're skipping Cal. They're only one under. Not going to do that. I'm going to go Michigan. It's going to finish over. And my under, maybe a little bit picking easy fruit here, whatever. I'm going Alabama under. Like we said, 20 below.
Low-hanging fruit. Do they have fruit? Can they grow fruit in Tuscaloosa? It's a soil game, do you think?
I don't know. I know it's a pecan territory over in Georgia. I don't know if that extends all the way over to Tuscaloosa. So, but not quite south enough for the Florida oranges. But it's kind of been a trend in recent years. Just Alabama has not been able to get over the hump, and this 500 rule doesn't help. And they've got a pretty tough schedule coming in. But we said keep it easy. But if we're picking one, Michigan over, Alabama under.
Yeah, at least the last 2 years, they've finished under, significantly under 500. But I think you got to give credit where credit's due. They haven't backed off in terms of the schedule that they put. So, again, you're trying to prepare players for the next level, assuming that they don't hop in the portal, which has been a trend, not just for Alabama, but other schools as well. Playing the tough schedule, I guess, develops you. But you mentioned Florida Oranges. You know it's sumo citrus season, right? Are you a big sumo guy? Have you ever had them?
As a non-Florida resident, I have not. I am very. I'm learning now for the first time.
Oh my goodness! So I don't know if they. Well, I think they actually grow more in California. I think they're more of a California thing. But they're the wrinkly oranges with like the sumo wrestler hair top on it, like a little top knot on the top. Have you seen
that? Okay. Yeah, I do.
You're right now in Ponte Vedra Beach, right? Are you staying at correct. Airbnb with the Mule Whisperer, Adam Shupak? And oh no, you're at Shoot's house.
Yeah, we're at Casa de Shupak this week. It's nice.
You're in his living room. Hangout. I can tell that's his living room, right?
No, I'm in the office. I'm in his office, which is I'm sitting about 200 yards from the first tee of Sawgrass Country Club, where the Hate was played this week. So
there you go. There you go. An actual home game for Shupak. He was out there. But does he have Dean Beeman posters all over the walls? I'm pretty sure.
There's a few books in here. A few books, but.
Well, anyways, go across the street. There's a Publix, and buy a couple sumo citruses, and it'll change your life. You might need to smuggle them back to Oklahoma and then enjoy them when you get to La Costa. Although I think the season's over by the time we get to May. But anyways. Enough fruit talk. We were almost at the 40-minute mark. Cameron, thank you for coming on. I know it's kind of last minute that I asked you, but you know, Berko is he's a busy man this week. And we're going to check the Liberty score, the basketball score, once I get off. I'm very nervous, but no, seriously, thanks for coming on. And we'll talk soon.
Yeah, appreciate you for having me, and it was a great time.
Well, and now we'll switch over to the interview that I did with Farrah O'Keefe of Texas, which was actually quite enjoyable, and I think everyone's going to like it. All right, pleased to be joined by Farrah O'Keefe from the University of Texas.
Yeah.
currently the first round leader at the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate. Now, this will get posted next week. So she may win. She may not win, but regardless, nice to catch up with her in person. And Farah, thanks for coming on for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Now, you had a big win in Palos Verdes. So we talked about it a little bit ago. 9 top 11 finishes in your last 10 events. What do you credit with that consistent play? Did you find something before that stretch, or was it just a matter of doing what you do well?
I think that kind of a little bit of both. You know, I think I've had, like, over the last year or so, I've had some pretty consistent play. And I've had some pretty consistent play, and I feel like everything's kind of trending in the right direction. I think as of recently, I would say kind of started more June, I got a new putter. Actually got fit for a putter. So it was the first time. It was like maybe the second time in my life I've ever been fit for a putter. Every other time it's just been like, hey, what feels good? This feels good. Picking up a Golf Galaxy, you know, whatever. then I tell, you know, the titles people, I'm like, hey, this is kind of what I want. And I think that, so I got that putter in June. I went and played the British. Played really well at the British. And then I just had kind of some momentum on my side. I finally felt like, okay, like, you know, I don't have to pay as much attention to the putting stats anymore. It's kind of taken care of. So there was always like that kind of like nagging. You know, you look at your putting stats and it's like, dang, I'm losing a lot of strokes on the green. Like, what am I doing wrong? And sometimes it's just the putter. And so I felt like that was really a big change. But, you know, this semester so far, this is our third event. We did a mental game training over the winter. So we went over a lot of different kind of strategies on how to tackle different things, like if you're playing under pressure or if you feel like you're not there, but you're there, you know, that kind of stuff. So I feel like that was really helpful. And it was also, we built a team culture. I feel like our team culture's been a lot better since even last semester. We didn't play our best in those 4 events in the fall. But our team culture has really started to kind of rise, and everybody's really pushing each other in all of the right ways.
So let's dive into a few of those areas. Let's start with the putter. You said you played well at the British Am. You finished runner-up.
Yeah.
so that's a little bit better than well. But did you go from a blade to mallet or mallet to mallet? And then I understand maybe a little bit of damage to the putter recently that you got fixed.
Yeah. I played for my freshman year all the way through to the end of my fall of my sophomore year. I played a blade. I played a Newport 2. A couple of different variations in there, but always the same head and the same neck and all that kind of stuff. And then after a really bad fall, or not bad, but a tough fall, I was like, okay, I need to change. I need to go to something completely different. So I changed how I stood over the ball, changed how I gripped the putter. I literally changed it. I went back to zero. I changed everything. Didn't change how I read the greens or anything, but I changed the putter, the setup, all that kind of stuff. And so I went to the old red TaylorMade Spider that has no line on top. It was like a 33-inch putter.
The Jason Day putter.
The Jason Day putter. I'd been playing a 35-inch putter, so I went to 33 inches. Jason Day putter. Played great with that throughout the entire spring. And then I get to the US Open. I qualified for the US Open with that putter. Get to the US Open. I make the cut. And on Saturday, I'm like, Dad, something's wrong with this putter. I'm sorry. Like, he was caddying for me. I was like, we're the only 2 people there. I was like, something's wrong. We need to get somebody to look at it. So luckily enough, the head pro at Erin Hills was a TaylorMade guy. And he looks at my putter. He goes, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. Your insert is caved in. I'm like, yeah, happens all the time. Okay, perfect. What do I do about it? Except Sunday, you know? So I ended up playing a rental club from the pro shop.
Wow.
And the first like 4 holes of Sunday were a little rough speed wise. It was like, again, completely different. But then I kind of got the hang of it. And I think I played okay. I finished 36th.
Yeah, T36.
And so that was good. But then I sent that putter home with my dad because I had to go directly to the Palmer Cup. And when I get to the Palmer Cup, I show up and I have no putter. And I'm like, hey, you know, Tyler Savannah is there. I was like, kind of need a putter right now. Like, it's the only thing that's missing my bag, literally. And so they walked me through a fitting, and painfully he looked at me and goes, this is your putter. Unfortunately, this is a prototype and we need it next week to fit all the PGA Tour guys. I was like, okay, well, can I just use it here? And maybe you can you know, build me one in the meantime that I can take because I'm going directly to the British. You know, it was like, bam, bam, bam. I played great at Palmer Cup. He's like, just keep it. It's fine. We can make another one. So take it to the British, finish runner up. And they literally just sent me a thumbs up. He's like, keep the butter. So, the rest is history. And that's, so that's my guy. But,
you bent it though.
Yeah. So last week we played at Moon in Florida. And I had 8-3 putts and I lost tournament by 8 shots. And so I looked at my coach and I was like, I promise I'm not this bad at putting. There's something wrong with the putter. Like, it's not me. I can feel it. So I get home the next day. My best friend happens to be a member of the only place in Austin that has Scotty Cameron locked in my machine. So I go there, get it checked. It looked, the guy was like, yeah, it's way off. It was at Austin Golf Club. Okay. And he was like, yeah, no good. But he couldn't bend it there because they didn't have all the right tools for it. I was like, okay. So I called Corey, who's my fitter, Titleist.
Did he used to be the assistant at Auburn?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And he drove down to Austin. And I'm like, I asked him, I needed a driving iron and I needed him to look at my putter. So he came down to Austin, had a driving iron ready for me, looked at my putter. He had like a calibration club or whatever and used our machine at UT Golf Club. And got it all back to perfect and immediately picked it up. And I was like, oh yeah, that's my putter. I knew it wasn't me. It was the putter. So, that was good. I felt like I had a week to really kind of work everything back into shape. And then I did a lot of by myself practice once we got here and making sure I had the speed of the greens down and all that kind of stuff.
And then you mentioned the mental training that you guys have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about kind of learning how to perform under pressure. Is there some sort of anecdote or example? Like how do you learn that? What technique or what exercise did they have you do to get better at that?
Well, I think the first thing that we talked about is how pressure is a privilege. Not everybody gets to play under pressure. So when you're in that situation, it's actually a good thing. So it's kind of redirecting maybe the nerves and all that kind of stuff into a good thing and something that's happy. Then we also talked about focusing on the next 200 feet in front of you. So if you're just trying to make it the next 200 feet, you're trying to make it the next 10 steps, all of a sudden you kind of lose sight of the fact of the situation that you're in. So that it the whole thing about being present, like you can say, oh, you need to be present right now. Or like, I felt really present today. But the actual way of like purposefully getting yourself into that mindset is it takes a lot of practice. It's a lot easier said than done. But it's little stuff like that. And it's keeping it simple, making process related goals for every single shot that you hit, not just like, oh, I'm going to make sure that, I don't know what a process related goal would be, but I'm not going to get ahead of myself. Like that's, it's a little bit vague. You have to be really deliberate in how you're going to.
I'm going to step into the shot the same way
Exactly. Like I'm going to make sure that my eyes are on my target, you know, or my goal today is to hit 16 greens. Okay. How do I hit 16 greens? That's to hit this green, right? Instead of, you know, and then you miss the last green. It's like, okay, great. I have to accept that and I have to move on. And I can't do anything about it. I just have to move on. So, there's always the, oh, I left a couple shots out there or whatever. And it's like, okay, it's great feedback for what to work on later. But really, when you're on the course, you can't be thinking about that because then you're not present. You're actually thinking about the last shot. And so, it's kind of just all that kind of stuff. We have my dad and I, he's been my coach forever. And he's really worked on getting me in the mindset of like, keep chopping wood. So like when you're chopping wood, I think Tiger says it, it's keep chopping wood. When you're chopping wood and you go to put the next log to chop, you have to do the exact same thing. You can't try something different. Like you're literally just going through the motions. Just do it again, do it again, do it again. And so that's kind of been the thing that I always say to myself, like physically turn around, look at the rest of the golf course that I've just played. Be like, I'm doing great. Let's just keep doing what you're doing. Because like the golden rule of sports is once you find something that works, don't change it. And so figuring out a way to keep yourself in that mentality of just keep going is kind of, that's been the biggest thing for me in the last probably like year and a half.
What do you feel like you've done best your entire career that you haven't changed?
I feel like I've done a lot of things well, but I do think that the one thing that comes to mind is that, and I'm not perfect at it. Like sometimes I have slip ups and you know, that kind of stuff. But I do think that one of the things that I've tried to continue to work on is just getting better. Just, you know, they always say like 1% a day or whatever. But it's as long as, like, I've always had progress is my term. So progress is the goal. Like as long as, and that's actually, funnily enough, something that we learned in our mental game program is just to keep going, just keep getting a little bit better. Sometimes you get worse. Sometimes you start struggling with something. But at the end of the day, no matter how bad you're struggling, you're probably going to run into that problem again. And so it's good when you get through it to take note of all the things that helped you along the way. So like my dad's always told me, like, there's no such thing as a slump. It's just a learning curve. And so that's kind of been my approach. I feel like if I play bad, of course, it's going to frustrate me because I feel like I could do so much better. But at the end of the day, I'd have to have a conversation with myself and be like, no, it's kind of a good thing you struggled today. You know, there's a couple of things that maybe showed a weakness in your game, or this is something you need to work on mentally, or whatever. So I feel like that's been something that I've done really well. Like during recruiting, for example, I wouldn't say severely under-recruited, but I only had one offer coming out of high school.
From Texas?
From Texas. And
you were local, so they knew.
I was local. I never played. I played 3 AJGAs. I hadn't played a U.S. Girls Junior until I'd already committed to Texas. So I really wasn't, nobody knew who I was, kind of was the deal. And
so that tag was a little bit warranted, maybe.
It was. I mean, I had like people like Arkansas looked at me and, you know, Houston looked at me and all that kind of stuff, but it really wasn't. I wasn't on the front. I wasn't on the forefront. And for an example, even more evidence to that is I really wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Like I really didn't have the best ball striking or whatever. You know, we're playing 5,800 yards and I would go shoot 68. And it's like, okay, it's great, but it's really par 68. So really I shot even. And so that kind of stuff. But I think that when I went into college early, it was a really big learning experience for me because I approached it in the way that, like, this is a really great semester to learn and to see whether or not I actually belong at this level. And when I played with the girls on the team and I realized, oh, like, I'm actually competitive, it kind of boosted my confidence a little bit. And then I came out of the gates my freshman year and I played really well. But I think that through that entire recruiting process, like, my parents were a lot more stressed out than I ever was, especially my mom. She was like, you need to go to school. We need to figure out something. But my dad always had this mindset of like, you're going to end up wherever you need to go. And the entire goal is to just get a little bit better every day. Let's just get a little bit better. And then I happened to have kind of Texas like fall into my lap, which was the biggest blessing in the world. It really was. Because at that time it was kind of like, you know, it was already almost a year of recruiting and that was my first offer. And it was like, I don't know. My parents were scared. I was kind of feeling a little bit of like under pressure, like, dang, I don't even know if I'm going to play college golf, that kind of stuff. Because I really wanted to go to school. I had academic prowess as well, not just, you know, take an offer because it was, you know, somewhere because it was an offer. And so I really was weighing kind of whether or not I was even going to go to college, like for golf. And then that happened. And it was like, it was great. But regardless, my dad and I had always had the idea that like really doesn't matter. It's okay, let's just get better, let's get closer to perfection, you know, every day. And like, you're not going to reach perfection, it's kind of impossible, but you can strive for it and you can try to get there.
Yeah, I think about a Maverick McNeely on the men's side, someone who played more locally.
Yeah,
now, you know, he was in the top 10 in the world at some point last year. I remember talking to Coach Murphy too, because you were part of a recruiting class with Lauren and yes, Cindy as well.
Selena. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Lauren was probably, rankings-wise, was probably way the... better. Yeah. And, but I remember specifically, I was driving somewhere through Jacksonville on I-10, and I remember him going through his signees, and I remember him getting to you, and I hear the last name, and I immediately think of the artist,
right,
Georgia O'Keeffe, and know nothing about you. And I just remember him saying, yeah, no one else really looked at her and no one else knows what I just got, or something like along those lines. And you've obviously proved him right, you know, all these years later. But now you have a new coach. You mentioned Laura, you mentioned the team. it's tough to go through a transition, especially with a head coach. But what do you feel like Laura does well to create that camaraderie that you've talked about and that chemistry?
She's just fun. Like, to be completely honest, she's just fun. Yeah. She's a light. She has, off days or whatever, but I really do think she comes to practice every day with the same energy. So do our assistants. Our assistants they love us. They, she takes us to her house for dinner every once in a while, and it's like...
What'd she cook?
Yeah. Oh, she, what did she cook that one time? She had Mexican food once. Trying to think what
they... Is she making this herself, or is she just going and...
She did actually make something. I think she made Italian food. It was like a barbecue chicken. Unbelievable. It was really, really, really good. But the first time we went over there, she catered. So she was scared. But yeah. But now we trust her a little bit more, the more that we get to know her. But yeah, she's just fun. I think she keeps everything light. She's obviously very, very driven as a coach. Like, when we have team conversations, you can feel the passion. Like, she really brings it every day. And we also work with Mark Brooks as a team. He's kind of been in and out of he works with me individually. I work with him. But he also has kind of been helping a couple of the other girls on the team. He's a great swing coach, but I think more importantly, he brings all of the experience from professional life.
PGA Tour.
Yeah. I mean, he won a major. He won 7 PGA Tour events. So, he has all of that experience of how to succeed at the highest level. So does coach. I mean, she won a national championship. So that's no small feat at all. It's a pretty big deal. And I think really, like, when we have conversations, you can really feel how badly she wants another one. And I think that, like, to all of the girls, it makes us really hungry to keep chasing that. And Texas has never won one on the women's side. So,
which is crazy to think about.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Especially with everybody that's coming out of that program. It's pretty crazy. So we're a little bit overdue.
And you grew up a Texas fan, right? Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about your family. I understand your mom's a school teacher. Is mm-hmm. that correct? And your dad, tennis coach, or yeah. did he play professional tennis at all?
He did a little bit. Yeah. Okay. He played tennis and rugby. So kind of an odd mix, but growing up in New Zealand, it was like, in the winter you'd play rugby and in the summer you'd play tennis. That was kind of the deal. And so he was a speed position. It wasn't like he was a big guy in the field getting hit.
I mean, I imagine every position in rugby is pretty tough.
But. Yeah. Yeah. He played tennis. He played, I think he like, practice partner for some world number one at Roland Garros and like all that kind of stuff. So he did some, I swear the guy's lived like 30 lives and he's done the coolest things. he has 100 stories, but
your mom keeps the unit together.
Though. Yes. Yeah. Mom is, she's the cornerstone of the family for sure. But she was an athlete too. Not a lot of people know this, but she was, I think she was a state champion at Taekwondo. And she was like, I know, like black belt, like crazy badass lady. Yeah. And then she was like, one time just off the cuff, like, yeah, I could have gone to the Olympics, but I didn't want to. And I'm like, what? And she was like, yeah, I had to go to school. Like, I had to go get my master's degree. So she did a bunch of, I don't know, she's probably lived 30 lives too, but I don't even know about it. But yeah, she's really, you know, she's my biggest supporter. She's my mom. We're very, very close. She means a lot to me. She comes out to tournaments every once in a while. And, it's very special when she does come out to tournaments. And I kind of want to prove it to her, like all of the years of, sacrifice and all the time in the car driving the tournaments. Yeah. It's been worth it. Same for my brother.
You're not even the best athlete in your family, maybe. Your brother's. He's a senior. What is mm-hmm. it? And he's being recruited in football, right? What's his name? And
Elias O'Keefe. He's like a 4.5 star deep snapper.
He's a snapper. He's okay.
Crazy. He probably played. Every position on the field this last year, though. I mean, he played like on the team roster. It has 5 different positions by his name.
He'll be playing snapper in college.
Hopefully,
maybe for Texas. Or?
Yeah, hopefully for Texas. I mean, they need to look at him. But yeah, he's been talking to East Texas A&M. Just went on a visit to Fort Lewis in Colorado, so he's kind of been all over the place with recruiting. But yeah, he's also a power lifter, and he's on a little bit of a heater right now. He won his first powerlifting competition in January, I think, and then just won his last one, and he was the best lifter. So he had the highest weight total, I think, of the entire tournament.
What do you lift? What are we talking about?
Over 1,500 pounds. So he squatted 615, And then I think he benched 385 or 390.
And then the other one's deadlift.
And then the other one's deadlift, and he's over 600 pounds again. Yeah, he's a beast. He's really like, I mean, he was weighed in at 219. So
he's not like a massive guy.
He's not a massive guy. He's big, but he's just incredibly strong.
Sounds like he could play linebacker for someone.
Yeah. They put him in at fullback for a little while. He did really, really good at that position. So college coaches, he's looking.
Yeah. What are, obviously you want to play professional golf in the LPGA, win majors. Has that been a goal forever? Or then how do you achieve that? Where do you go from here?
Yeah, it's been a goal since I started golf, probably. When I was 11, I wrote down this list of life goals, and it's like the first two were like, win a U.S. Kids Golf Tour, like kind of smaller things.
Which you did that.
I did do that, and then I wanted to win Junior Worlds, but I didn't get to do that. So that one has an X on it, but I have a couple. It was like, get a scholarship, win a national championship. One of them is like, get my tour card. And then I got like, buy a really big, nice pink truck. Like, just, you know, little kid goals.
You don't have that yet.
Though. I don't have that yet. Yeah, okay. I need one of those. And then, like, have a family and a house and all that kind of stuff. So, still a couple blank. And I think that, you know, like, Hall of Fame player, like, win 18 majors or 20 majors or whatever. They get really big. Yeah. As you go down the list. I think that's when I... Those are what kind of keep me driven, like looking at those really, really big goals that seem absolutely impossible. I think that's what helps me like stay motivated to keep working towards perfection. Cause like at that level, I've played in 2 US Opens. I've played in 3 professional events total. I've made the cut in 2, but I thought I played my butt off and I still finished, outside the top 30. So, that really just shows like the level of competition, the better and better you get, the harder and harder it is to really compete and be great. And so I think that like when I chase perfection now and I'm trying to get closer to 1% better or whatever, just get a little bit better every day. I always have that in the back of my mind where it's like, okay, like there's probably somebody else out there who's outworking me right now. And it kind of pisses me off a little bit because I'm like...
As it should.
Yeah. Like, I want to be the hardest worker. I want to be the person putting in the most hours, whether it's on the golf course or meditating or whatever it is. So, I think that like, of course, I want to go play well professionally and I want to win majors and do all the big things. But the first step is getting a little bit better today. And then we'll see where that takes me.
And then lastly, one of the goals that was probably not on that list because it wasn't a tournament yet, but the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Yeah.
If you had to go back and you could see into the future, that would probably be on that as well.
I've penciled some things in. So
okay.
I think that's
so you've added it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you, what have you figured out in your past experience there that gives you a lot of confidence going into, I guess would be maybe this will be your second to last one, I guess.
Yeah. Crazy to think about that. I mean, it's almost like, it almost makes me kind of sad. It's such a great event. And I remember when in 2018, when Mr. Fred Ridley announced that they were going to host the event in the first place. And it was like, I remember turning to my mom and being like, coming to play that, that kind of stuff. I do think like the last 2 years, obviously Champions Retreat has changed a lot. And so has Augusta with the hurricane and everything that happened last year. So like last year, I thought Champions Retreat played a little bit easier. And I thought, you saw some really low scores by like Mega and all that kind of stuff.
It was softer, wasn't it?
Like, it was softer. Yeah. It was a lot of trees got knocked down. So it was easier to hit some drives. Like some second shots on par fives were easier.
The wind a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm specifically thinking of 16. Like you used to not be able to go over the corner. Because there was a massive tree right there. Well, now that massive tree is gone. And so I think that makes the hole literally a shot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that knowing that's the golf course that we're going to go back to, I think that's confidence boosting. Because my first year, I was like, I don't know about this place. seems a little difficult. But it's a little bit better. It's actually kind of helped the layout a little bit.
You got the putting figured out now.
I've got the putter. Yeah, I'm going to go check the putter when we get there. Make sure everything is right. I do think that playing in front of crowds like that for whatever reason kind of getting me amped up. Like, I really want to play well because I'm a bunch of people following you, so like, you kind of got to play well. So I think that that's kind of something that I'm getting a little bit more used to. Like the first year I played there, I was kind of like, wow, there's a lot of people here. Like, got kind of a little bit scared, but I think I've got better. Like last year, I handled it way, way, way better. Completely different. But also, just anytime you get to play Augusta, it's like you can't not be happy, right? Like yeah. I would say it's one of the greatest places on earth. And so, playing golf out there is like it's a dream. And so it feels like you're like, you know, you're walking through heaven for a second.
Well, yeah.
a golfer's dream. And so, yeah, you can't like go out there and be all pissed off and like, God, like I'm playing so bad. Like, who cares if you're 85? Like, you're at Augusta Nationals.
Well, Farrah, thank you for the time.
And thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing what you could do at Augusta. And if you can check off a couple more goals, national championship, I think, you know, based on how you guys are playing so far this spring, definitely a possibility. So
thank you. Well, thank you so much.
And fingers crossed as she plays two more rounds here at Long Cove Club. And, you know, we'll know by the time we listen to this whether she's won or not.
Heck yeah. Thank you.